1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse number 22. 1 Samuel 2 and verse 22. 1 Samuel 2, verse 22 says, "Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, how that they lay with the women that were assembled at the door of the tabernacle of his congregation. And he said unto them, Why do ye these such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. Ye make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall interact for him? Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them." Now, Eli. We don't know a whole lot about Eli. Eli was a priest. It was like the preacher. And Eli was a very old man. And his sons were grown by this time. And Eli encouraged his boys to do right. And they wouldn't listen. They just ignored him. And the reason was that he had never earned influence in their life. He had no influence in their life. Oh, probably when they were younger, he was probably their authoritarian over them and led them with his authority, but he never gained influence in their life. And so as a result, they wouldn't listen to Dad when they got older. They didn't heed his advice. You know, the sad thing is that this scenario is present in countless Christian homes today. Countless Christian homes where the parents fail to earn influence in their children's lives, and as soon as the children are out from under their authority, they go and live a godless life. So while the kids are home, they kind of behave themselves a little bit, and there's squabbles and troubles and problems, but inside the child's just waiting. When I get out of here, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm not going to listen to them anymore. And as soon as they leave home, their life goes to pieces, and they forget about God. Why? Because the parents never gained influence in their children's lives. Now, let's flip over to the New Testament, to the book of 1 Thessalonians. And it'll give us some foundational information here to help us understand what we're talking about as far as gaining influence in our children's lives. 1 Thessalonians, just before the Timothys, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. And we're going to be looking at the first 13 verses, and I'll just make some comments on them after I read them, and to try to help us to see the importance of influence. Here, Paul is giving us an example of influence in the life and ministry that he had with people. You know, what we're talking about here tonight is not just about parenting. It really isn't. It's about my ministry as a pastor. It's about your ministry as a neighbor. Reaching into the neighbors' lives. If you have no influence with your neighbors, you will have if you do not earn influence with your neighbors and you try to tell them about Christ, they'll tell you to get lost because you have no influence in their life. We have to earn influence. No matter what we're doing, we have to earn influence in order to have an impact on other people. Whether it be our children or somebody else, we've got to earn that influence. Here, Paul was talking about the influence that he earned in Thessalonica. Verse number 1. "For yourselves, brethren, know our entrance in unto you, that it was not in vain. But even after we had suffered before and were shamefully entreated, as you know, at Philippi, we were bold in our God to speak unto you the gospel of God with much contention." Now, here he talked about the persecution that he had faced. And before he went to Thessalonica, he had been at Philippi. What happened at Philippi? Well, he was beaten and thrown in prison. And it was there at Philippi, you know, the jail was shaken by the earthquake and he escaped from that, and God protected him. But he was beaten and severely. Now he went to Thessalonica. They had known about that. And he said, "Remember, I came here even though I had been beaten, even though I had been threatened, even though I had been persecuted, I continued preaching the gospel to you. Verse 3. "For our exhortation was not of deceit, nor of uncleanness, nor of guile." All right, now here he's just saying that we didn't try to deceive you. We were not unclean in our actions and our tactics. We were not using trickery to try to deceive you or to trick you into believing something. We were real. We were real with you. And we were up front with you, and we gained that closeness that we're talking about here. Verse number 4. But as we were allowed of God to be put in trust with the gospel, even so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God, which trieth our hearts. So here, he said, we did not use flattery. We didn't use fancy words to try to, that's verse number 5. Verse number 4, he said that we taught the word of God rather than pleasing ourselves. We weren't trying to please ourselves or please you. We were just teaching what the word of God said. Verse 5 talks about flattery, and he says, for neither at any time used we flattering words. All right, flattery, what's that? Well, that's when you say, you know, nice things about somebody. Another way of putting it, and maybe you don't use these terms over here, but they call them buttering somebody up or making them, you know, sweet talk to them to try to get them to be on your side and to side with your situation. He said, we didn't do any of that. We didn't flatter. Neither did we use a cloak of covetousness, a cloak or they weren't trying to cover up things with a covetous desire, deep down inside, really wanting something out of them. And so, you know, we saw so much of that in Papua New Guinea. When we first got to Papua New Guinea, we lived out into the jungle, and everybody was our friend. Everybody was our friend. Because white man came to our village. Oh, that's important. We're going to get something out of this. We're going to be his best friend, so we'll get something in our pocket too. And they all had this idea, and they kept asking me, when are you going to start a trade store? I said, I'm not starting a trade store. I'm starting a church. And they come back and go, when are you going to start your store? See, they thought, you know, oh, white man's going to bring store in here. We'll work for him. We'll get some money out of him. And I said, we're not here. We're starting a church. And after they found out that we were really just starting a church, then all of a sudden they kind of disappeared. What they're doing is they're trying to flatter us. And that's what he's talking about. He said, we didn't do that. When we came to your village, your town, we didn't flatter you. We didn't use this cloak of covetousness. And he says, God's our witness about this. Verse number 6, nor of men sought we glory. We didn't try to get your praise. That's not why we were there. Neither of you nor yet of others. He said, we didn't come to get praise from you, and we didn't come to be a burden unto you. He says, that when we might have been burdensome as the apostles of Christ. What he was talking about there is he said, as an apostle of Christ, I could have taken up offerings and said, come on folks, you need to support me now because I'm trying to carry on this work and ministry. He said, I didn't even do that. He said, I deserved it, but I didn't do it because I didn't want to be burdensome unto you. I just came and provided my own way, wasn't burdensome at all to you. And verse number 7, but ye were gentle among, we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children. Now this isn't talking about a nurse down at the local Joondalup hospital. It's talking about a mother that nurses her children. She's nursing her children, very gentle, tender to the nursing child. Paul said, that's exactly how I treated you. I came to you very tender, very gentle, very carefully cherishing you like a mother cherishes her dear child. Verse number 8. So being affectionately desirous of you. So he says, we truly loved you. We showed you our affection and our love. We were willing to impart unto you not the gospel only, but our own souls, because ye were dear unto us. He said, we gave not just the gospel, we gave ourselves to you. We were there to meet your needs. We were there to be a help to you, to be an encouragement to you, to build you up, to strengthen you. In any way that we could be a help, we were there for you. And because you were dear unto us. Verse 9, for ye remember, brethren, our labor and travail. All right, so he says there was hard work. Travail means we were just tired out. We worked hard. We got tired out, laboring night and day because we would not be chargeable unto any of you. We preached unto you the gospel of God. So he's talking about we sacrificed ourselves. We were willing to work night and day to try to help you. You know, as parents, there's a lot of times it's going to take long nights with our children, staying up with them when they're little, when they're having needs and they're sick and those kind of things. But also when they're getting to be teenagers and they got troubles or they got problems, they got a burden. And it may mean staying up late, working through the issue, working through it and helping and strengthening them. There's going to be tiring times. Paul said, we gave like that. We met those needs. We were there for you. Verse 10, your witnesses and God also how holily and justly and unblameably we behaved ourselves among you that believed. He said, we lived holy lives before you. We were just. We weren't unjust or unrighteous in any way. We were unblameable. We lived a good example before you. And he said, all of these things we did because we care about you. And he ends it up there in verse number 11. He says, you know how we exhorted and had comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children. Now, a second time Paul refers to the family. The first time he talked about the mother cherishing her child that was nursing and dear to her. Now he talks about a father exhorting or encouraging and comforting and charging or giving instruction to his son. And Paul said, I did that like a father does his children, that ye would walk worthy of God who has called you unto his kingdom and glory. For this cause also we thank God without ceasing, because when ye received the word of God which ye heard of us, ye received it not as the word of men, but in truth the word of God, which effectually worketh also in you. Verse number 13, Paul is saying here, we earned influence, and you gave us that influence. You gave us an opportunity to influence your life with the gospel because we were faithful in doing our part of what we should do in earning that influence. So with that as a background for us, as parents, God gave us authority over our children while they live under our home. While they live under our roof, our children are under our authority. And authority, there's two statements here I want you to catch. Authority is for their protection and their welfare. Authority is for their protection and welfare. Son, don't do that. Don't play in the road. Get up. It's time to go. It's for their perfection, or for their protection and for their welfare. Authority. And God gave us that authority, and it's important. We need authority. Authority is very important in a home. But at the same time, we must earn influence in our children's lives. Influence is for their direction. All right? Authority is for their protection. Influence is for their direction. In other words, you can command your children to eat their peas and to go to bed at 9 and to do their homework and to keep quiet and to stay away from snakes. There's all kinds of things you can command of your children. But there's a lot of things you can't command. For example, you cannot command them to love God. You can't command them to get saved. You cannot command them to be godly, nor to repent of their sins, nor to respect and honor you. You can't command any of those things. All of those things must be earned by influence. You've got to earn influence in their life. You can influence them to be saved. You can influence them to be godly. You can influence them to love God. You can influence them to honor you as their parent, but you cannot command it. Oh, you can try, but it won't work because it's something you cannot do. You don't have control of that area of their life. And we must gain influence in order to be able to do that. Now, the same thing I mentioned to our neighbors just a moment ago. If you want to try to witness to your neighbors, and yet every time you've had contact with your neighbors, there's been crosswords and sharp contact and unkind things, and there's just nothing between you and your neighbors that is friendly at all. And you go over there and try to win them to Christ, what's going to happen? You've got no influence with them. They're going to say, get out of here. I'm not interested in that. And they'll just push you away. But on the other hand, if you have been building influence by being kind and being cordial and helpful and pleasant and nice in every way we can. Now, again, we're not talking about flattery. Paul said, I didn't come to flatter you, but being tactful is a bright thing to do. Being right is helpful in reaching out. If you've laid the foundation, if you've gained influence with them, they may give you some influence and when you come to tell them about Christ. They may listen politely, at least. They may still not be interested, but at least they'll politely listen and say, well, you know, thanks for coming over and telling me. You know, and even if they're not interested, at least they've given you a little bit of influence because you've earned some influence with them. Same thing is true with our children. We must earn influence. You cannot command influence in their lives. And it's very important we see this. Now, if we have earned influence in our children's lives, they will want to follow our steps. They will value our counsel. They will adopt our standards. They will appreciate our warnings. They will trust our judgments, even if they don't understand them. And they will want to please us. See, these are things that we are seeking in the lives of our children. We want them to trust us, to depend upon us, to believe us, to follow us, to imitate us. But we've got to earn that influence in their lives, because it's not going to happen automatically. Our children, as they mature, our authority will diminish. Now, for example, when children are real little, you know, you can tell them things to do, you know, eat your peas, you know, go to the toilet. You know, you can tell the little kids that, and they'll go do what you told them to do. Now, when they're 19, you know, it's not too likely you can say, come on, Johnny, eat your peas. Dad, I'm not 2 anymore. You know, come on, let me decide whether I want peas or not. And you know, there's things that you have lost authority over them. And that's normal, and that's what we want as parents, because what are we doing? We're shifting the authority. We're shifting the authority. Instead of my authority, I'm teaching them to be their own authority so they can make their own right choices. And so when, as life goes on, they're making more and more choices, I'm making less and less choices for them until they become adults. And then they can go on their own. A parent that doesn't do that and keeps absolute authority over the child the whole time, and the kid goes out and goes on his own, he flops because he says, what do I do now? I don't even know how to do anything. I don't know how to take care of myself. Because parents have never given him any authority. And so we naturally are losing our authority over time. But as parents, we ought to be naturally gaining our influence over time. Gaining more and more and more and more influence with our children, so that as they get older, they learn to value more and more our input in their lives. And realize that dad and mom have something to say that is helpful. They're there for my help, my benefit. They can guide me, and their direction is important. And so we ought to be increasing our influence and decreasing our authority at the same time. And it's a process that works throughout their lifetime as we have them at home. Now, all of that's introduction to what we're going to be looking at here tonight, and then I need to move right along. Now, this evening we're going to learn how to do 3 things. How caring interaction will build trust. Secondly, how trust will earn influence. And thirdly, how influence supports authority. And we'll go over this as we go through it. First of all, caring interaction builds trust. Caring interaction. Caring interaction has 3 essential ingredients to it. First one is care. You've got to care. Our children must know that we care about them. They must know that we care about them. If we push them aside, ignore them, tell them to leave us alone, be quiet, you're bothering me, and we're constantly pushing them away, in their hearts they're saying, I don't think they really care. And they can sense that we care more about ourselves than we care about them. And if they get that impression, they think, Mom and Dad might love me, but they don't really care. They really don't care. And the older they get, the more severe that gets in their heart. As they begin to feel like, Mom and Dad just don't really care. They don't understand. And every teenager goes through this point where they feel like Mom and Dad were from the dark ages and they don't understand my life and things are different now and they just don't understand what's going on in my life. And a lot of young people come to the place where they think, you know, and I don't think they even really care. And that's tragic, because they've got to sense that we care in order for us to be building trust in their lives. We've got to build trust in their lives. Now, building trust starts with building care, showing care. Now, I've listed 7 things, and there's probably lots of other things that you could put under this that will help us to build care, or to show them we care. And by caring, we can build trust. Number one, you need to love them with agape love, God's love. Love them with genuine love. Remember, our definition of love is giving of yourself to meet the needs of another, expecting nothing in return. Love them genuinely, with a genuine love. and be genuine about your interactions with them. You know, there's a huge difference between love and like. And you know, some parents may love their children, but they don't like their children very well. And we need to be careful about that too. We need to accept them. Number two is to accept them as they are. Accept them. Treat them with compassion. Cherish them like a nursing mother. Value them, even if their personality is not like yours. And it's not easy. I probably struggled with that one more than anything else. Every child's different. Someone's got a personality more like mine, and that we kind of mesh. And then others have personalities that are friction. And it's like, all right, it's easier to mesh with the one that's more like my personality than the one that's not more like my personality. But we've got to be careful with that. We need to accept them as they are and value them. Treat them with compassion and cherish them. Number three, give them attention. Give them attention. If we're going to care about them, they need to know we care by giving them attention. Focus on them individually. Look at them. It's important that we actually spend time looking at our children. You think, well, what's that got to do with it? It has lots to do with it because they need that eye contact with us. So looking at them, spending time with them, admire their coloring pictures that they do, and go to ball games with them, take them camping and tuck them into bed and all those things. Spend that time giving them attention. They need our attention. Number four, treat them gently. Treat them gently. Harshness hardens hearts. Harshness hardens hearts. We need to treat them gently. Children are going to make mistakes, lots of them. They're going to spill their milk and make a mess, and you know they're going to be immature. We got to be gentle with them. And sometimes it's not easy. You know, you come home from a long day of work and you're tired and feeling a bit agitated as it is, and then you know you're having dinner and the kids tips over his milk because he's just too clumsy to be careful with it and makes a big mess all over the place. And, you know, then, you know, just tension. And we need to be very careful to be gentle and forgiving. Forgiving. Let them know it's just an accident. I forgive you. It's all right. No problem. And then number five, empathize with them. Empathize with them. Empathy is putting yourself in their shoes or feeling things from their perspective. Try to understand their burdens and enter into their feelings. Cry with them. Pray with them. Hug them. And one of the things that I've highlighted in my notes, and I challenge you to highlight in yours, never laugh at them. Never laugh at them. Never laugh at them. Because children, especially as they get a little older, I mean, little children, they might be able to handle a little bit, but the older they get, the more sensitive they get. And they get to be a teenager, and you laugh at them for something they did dumb, or something they should have known better, or something that, you know, maybe you don't even know how to handle the situation, and you feel awkward as a parent. Instead of facing it head on and talking about it like two men or a man and a woman or whatever you need to do, you just make a joke out of it because you just don't know what to say. Don't ever do that. Don't laugh at your children because it is a hard thing for them to conquer. Number six, admit your weaknesses to them. You know, if you're real with them, they'll be real with you. If you're willing to be honest with them about your weaknesses, especially seek their forgiveness if you've hurt them or failed them in any way. You know, when you fail them, and you will, we all do. And when you do, you need to be willing to admit it and talk to them about it, and ask their forgiveness. And number seven, be a friend. Be their friend. Solomon wrote in Proverbs 18:24, a man that has friends must show himself friendly. We need to be their friend. They need us as a friend. And the older they get, the more they need us as a friend. But you know, the truth is, if you don't become their friend when they're little, you won't be their friend when they're 16 or 18. You've got to be their friend. And all of these other things are all part of being a friend. And it has to start when they're little. Because all too often what happens is when they're little, and I remember all too vividly, they're little guys and they want to do this and that. And I'm thinking, I don't want to sit down and play blocks. I got other stuff to do. No, I don't feel like doing that. Or sit down and color pictures with them. you know, I'd rather be reading a book or doing something else that's more important than coloring a picture with them. But it is important, because if we don't spend time with them when they're little, then we won't spend time with them when they're a little older. And then when they're teenagers, they don't want to spend time with us anymore, because you didn't care when I was little, and I don't think you care now either. And they don't want to spend the time with us. And what has happened is we're getting further and further and further apart, and we're getting less and less influence instead of more and more influence. We've got to be building the influence. And it starts by doing the little things that we don't enjoy and working our way up. So when you truly care for your children, you are building trust with them. As you care, you build a close relationship with them. And that's what we're after. So the first part of caring interaction is to care. Second is the interaction. We need interaction with our children. Interaction of all sorts. Interaction is doing things with your children. First thing is the most obvious is talking with them. Talk to them every day. Don't just talk at them, talk with them. And discuss things with them. Bring up topics of interest and topics of need. You know, as parents, one of the things that's, I don't know why, but we find it hard to bring up topics of need, especially needs that we don't really want to talk about. You know, things they got to learn when they grow up. And we think, I don't want to talk about that stuff. Let's talk about something else. And we need to talk to them about issues. There's things we got to talk to our kids about. They need to know about the world around them, about the drugs in the world and the drinking in the world and the immorality in the world and how they're going to face all these things. Well, bring up those kind of topics, not when they're 2 years old, but I mean, as you see the need. And, you know, don't deceive yourself into thinking the need won't be until they're 16. Many times parents wait far too long to talk to their children about some of the basic things of life. And then by the time the parent talks to them, all the neighbor kids have talked to them about some of those basic things too and given them the wrong story. And that's not good. And we need to make sure that we are caring for our children and talking to them, opening the door up and making it so that we can talk about anything, kids. And we're not embarrassed about this. Whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about. And if they bring up something you kind of squirm about, don't let them know you're squirming. You just talk about it like it's normal. And be willing to talk about all the things that come up. Because they need to know. And they need to feel comfortable talking with us. Talk about the Bible. Talk about God. Talk about all these kind of things. Then secondly, we need to listen. Interaction involves listening. As they talk, we need to listen to them. And when they're young, you know, they're telling us all these stories. And children, little children are quick to talk to us about all kinds of things. And they want to talk about this, that, and the other thing. And a lot of times, to be honest, we all know it's just dumb, silly stuff. And there's a temptation to feel like, oh boy, do I have to listen to this again? This silly little stuff that they're doing. I'm not really interested in all these silly little things that they're telling me. But it's important we do that when they're little so that they gain our trust and they're building a relationship with. And if we won't listen to them when they're little, then they won't talk to us when they're big. And we've messed it up. We need to be able to get them to listen, or listen to them so that they will talk to us readily and freely. Then number three, play with them. You may not feel like playing with them, but they need that interaction. Take them camping. Go to the ball, play ball with them. You know, I think it's good, and I don't know that this is something that's an absolute necessity, but I think it's a very good thing to do, is to set aside one evening a week as game night or family night or whatever you want to call it. Just one evening a week where nothing else takes place. This is our evening for the family. And if somebody calls up and says, oh, are you doing anything on Tuesday night? Yeah, sorry, we're already busy. Why? Because it's family night. We do family things together on Tuesday night or whatever night it is. And you know, but set that time aside. They need that. They need the play time. They need the interaction. And they joke with them and wrestle with them. And whatever they want, like to do, just have good time with them. Let them know that you care. Let them know interacting with them. Then number four, help them with their projects and with their homework. Help them. Help them. You know, whatever it may be. You know, things that they might want to do, or they're trying to make something. Help them. You know, kids are always coming up with ideas of something they want to make. And sometimes they're good ideas and sometimes they just won't work. And I remember as a boy, I wanted to make a billy cart. And I wanted one that had pedals on it so I could pedal it and make it go. And I had all these ideas. And back in our woods, we had all kinds of junk back there from old machinery and things. And I went back there collecting things. And I was going to build. And finally, my dad just talked to me. He says, I don't think it's going to work. And he was right. It wasn't going to work. All the junk I had just wasn't going to work. But we talked about it. You know, but, you know, discuss their ideas. Talk to them. Help them if you can. And give them ideas of things that they can do. And just work with them. Help with them. Then the fifth one is to work with them. Work with them. Do yard work together. Do housework together. Whatever their need is there. Teach them how to do a good job. You know, one of the reasons that a lot of young adults don't know how to do their good job is because they never learned to do a good job when they're at home. Their parents didn't expect a good job out of them. As long as it was halfway decent, it's okay. Make them do a good job. Teach them how to do a good job. It's for their benefit, and they'll be glad someday that you did. Explain how to do things. Teach them skills, and teach them how to cook, and teach them all the skills that you know, and build these skills in their lives. It'll be a blessing to them. It'll be a help to them, and it can be a help to you as well. So interaction with your children is building trust with them, and they desperately long for that interaction. And let's not let them down. So, first of all, there's caring. Secondly, there is interaction. Third is time. Time. If you're going to build trust with your children, it's going to take time. Time is that which links together the care and the interaction. There has to be time. Sacrifice your time to spend with your children. You always have lots to do, there's no question about that. But your children need to be with you. They need your time. And we need to spend time individually with our children. They need one-on-one time, not just the whole group together, but one-on-one time. They need that individual time. And one here thing that you need to mark down and note, there's a temptation, especially when parents are busy, there's a temptation to buy them things to make up for our lack of time with them. Don't do that. Never buy your children things to make up for your failure to spend time with them. They do not need your trinkets. They need your time. They do not need your trinkets. They need your time. And we've got to spend time with our children. Spend time frequently with your children. You know, every day they need to have some time with us. Some time with us. And spend time daily with them. And then at least each week spend some specific time with them. And then the fourth thing I noted here with time is that you need to make time with your children an absolute priority. It needs to be a priority. Let them know that you always have time to talk when they have a need. You always have time to talk when they have a need. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. You know, if they come to you at a time when, you know, say you're on your way to church and they say, oh, I need to talk to you, Dad. As soon as we get home, we'll talk. All right? It doesn't mean you stop and turn around and don't go to church. But I'm saying you always have time to talk and make time to talk with them. And it's got to start when they're young, because if you don't, when they get to be teenagers, Mom and Dad are not the first person that a lot of teenagers turn to talk to, because they're scared of Mom or Dad, or they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing, or they just have never had a relationship with Mom and Dad. They've never had an influence in their life. And so build that influence. Spend time with them. Stay up late at night if you need to talk with them. And be willing to even take a day off work if you need to be, to spend time with them and to meet that need. Now, I'm not talking about every time they want to go, you know, play some bowl game or something, you go skip work and do that. But there may be times when your child, especially as they're in teenage years, they have a specific need. And it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be helped. They need to be helped through this crisis in their life. And it may mean taking a day off work. You know, to be able to spend adequate time with our children, it may even mean some people need to change their jobs. Because some jobs just don't let their children have the time they need. And folks, the truth of the matter is, when we stand before God, it's not going to matter whether we made heaps of money, but it's going to matter whether we've raised our children for God. It's going to matter. And we've got to do everything we can, and our children need to know that I will do anything and everything I can to give you all the time you need to deal with your issues and your problems and your burdens in life. Time is all part of it. So, caring interaction builds trust. That's the bulk of our message this evening. Now, the second point is that trust earns influence. Trust earns influence. Once they trust us, it earns influence. Now, my definition of influence here is influence is the earned privilege to give direction. The earned privilege to give direction. And influence is important. We have to earn the privilege of giving directions. The more a person trusts you, the more they will allow you to influence their life. Back to the neighbor. The more they trust you, the more you will be able to influence them for the cause of Christ or in other ways. The more your children trust you, the more that you will be able to influence them in their life. And it involves other areas of our lives as well. When we're trying to build a relationship, we're building a trust, it allows us to have influence as we build our trust. Influence allows you to pass on your faith to your children, as we talked about a few weeks ago. Influence allows you to cultivate their hearts. Very important. If you have no influence, you are going to have a difficult time cultivating their heart because they're not going to trust you. There's got to be that influence. And influence comes by building the trust first. And we need to be very careful and remember, beware, Satan is constantly trying to undermine our trust and to destroy our influence. And he is anxiously trying to get other things and other people to replace the influence in our lives. Bad friends, media, all kinds of things in life are trying to influence us away from good and toward evil. And we have to struggle against Satan to earn that influence so that we can have an influence in their lives. And influence cannot exist without trust. Influence cannot exist without trust. Because if they don't trust us, we won't be able to influence them. You know, when we come to the time where we say, son, listen, I want to give you some advice on how to act in this situation. If he doesn't trust me, he's not going to listen to me. He'll say, no, I'll go talk to somebody else. I'm not interested in what you say, Dad, because I don't trust you. And, you know, you've let me down a whole bunch of times, and you've never built a relationship with me, and I don't really trust you. I'll go ask somebody else. I'll ask somebody else that I trust, and they'll give me influence. They'll give me the information I need. And so there's got to be that lack of influence in their lives. Excuse me, let me start that over. If you have not built trust in your children, you lack influence in their lives, and the day is coming that they will not obey your authority. All right, let me say that again. If you have not built trust in your children's lives, you lack influence in their lives, and the day is coming that they will not obey your authority. Because you have no influence. And once they get to the point where they think, you know, I'm old enough to make my own decisions, and I don't trust mom and dad anymore, and I don't have any trust in them, and I don't care what they say, and I'm tired of following their rules, I'm going to do it my way. And then you got a rebellious problem, and it all blows up, and they're going to disobey your authority. And if your teen rebels against you, you need to ask yourself some questions. A couple of them would be, where did I lose his trust? Where did I lose his trust? And another one to ask is, how can I rebuild our relationship and regain the trust? It's all about trust. We've got to build trust in our children's lives. If they don't trust us, they won't obey us eventually. Now, you can bluff your little ones, but once they get older, if they don't trust you, they're going to just say, I'm going to do it my way. I don't care what you say, because they don't have any trust in us. There's not that confidence in us, and we need that in their lives. That brings us to our third and final point, and that is influence supports authority. Influence supports authority. So we've seen, first of all, caring interaction builds trust. Trust earns influence. And thirdly, influence supports authority. Influence does not compete with authority. It completes authority. Influence does not compete with authority. It completes authority. Now, let me explain. With authority without influence causes rebellion. Authority, I said it, son, do it. Authority without influence causes rebellion. But authority with influence, encourages submission. Authority with influence encourages submission. I respect you, Dad or Mom, whatever the case may be, and I don't really want to do what you're saying, but I understand what you're saying, and I know why, and I believe you, and I trust you, and so I'll obey, because I care about you, and I know you care about me, so I'll obey. It encourages submission. So authority with influence encourages submission. If you have earned influence in your children's lives, they will respect your authority. They will trust your decisions. They will value your wisdom. We need that influence in their lives. Influence is more important than authority. It's more important than authority. You need authority. There's no question about that. And I'm not undermining authority. Authority is absolutely important. We talked a little bit about that in weeks gone by. But as Pastor Kerry Schmidt put it, he put it this way. He said, influence trumps authority. Influence trumps authority. In other words, influence is more powerful and more life-changing than authority. And your influence will last much longer than your authority. My three boys are all adults now. They're grown men. I've lost my authority over my boys. They have their own authority. But I'm thankful I still have some influence in their lives. I still have some influence in their lives. Now, if I would have worked harder at what I preached tonight when they were little, I'd probably have more influence in their lives today than I have. And every parent could probably look back and say the same thing. But the more influence we build as a youth, the more influence we'll have later on in life to direct them and guide them and counsel them and encourage them in the right directions in life, to help them to miss the pitfalls and the problems and the struggles of life. We can guide them because they will listen to us. But the less influence we have, they will follow somebody else's advice and they'll do us wrong and make wrong choices. And so we need to ask ourselves, how much influence have you earned with your children? How much influence have you earned with your children? Are you diligently working to build their trust by caring, interacting, and spending time with them? Each day that passes without building trust in your children's lives will lessen your influence. Let's not delay. We've got lots to do. There's much to do. Determine in your heart to build a close, trusting relationship with your children. You know, earn influence with your children. Make every sacrifice necessary to earn influence with your children. Time is limited. And the last thing that we want is to have our lives end up like Eli. So that when your children are adults and they make a wrong choice and you try to steer them in the right direction, they basically say, "Dad, get lost. I'm not interested." Because we have no influence. And you know, it's not just when they get to be adults. Many times when they get to be 15, 16, 17, and they get thinking on their own, and many teenagers at that age, they just say, "Dad, I don't care what you say anymore. I'm going to do what I want to do because I don't trust you and you haven't treated me right and you haven't been there when I needed you and I don't think you really care about me anyway, so I'm going to do what I want to do and if you don't like it, too bad." And they got major problems in their home because they never developed influence in their children's lives. So I challenge you tonight, folks, let's work on this diligently. As I mentioned before, probably of all the things I've preached about the family so far, this is the area where I needed it most. And I probably blew up more in this area tonight than any of these other areas of building influence. Now, I'm thankful for the influence I have with my boys. But I think how much more influence I could have had in their lives if I would have spent more time with them, if I would have been more caring and more understanding and more tender toward them and more gentle toward them and all these things we've talked about here tonight. Let's work diligently at it. And you who still have children at home, which is all of you, I urge you to apply these things in your life and you'll never regret it. Work at it diligently. It can make a huge difference in your future.